All right, now I should say before, Pat's got the list of questions all coming in, and I was sort of half listening to Jim, half looking at some of the questions. So, yes, I do know the question. Yeah, I was half listening to Jim. what we'll do, though, for those that we, if we do know where they've come from, if we don't get to them, we'll come back to you afterwards,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I don't want anybody to feel they're not going to get their question done, and so you're going to try to group some and we'll get going.
So a lot of good questions. Thanks, everybody. I am going to group a couple of questions have come in on cloud. So first question actually that came in today says that many surveys show AWS and Azure growing very fast with good share. Post the SoftLayer acquisition and with the comment that airlines have all picked IBM, can you talk about how IBM is differentiated from these players and specifically what are the innovations that IBM is bringing to the market that Amazon, AWS, and Azure are not?
Okay, I clearly get an F at having tried to explain that then. So David, in my veiled description of the differences here, I'm going to have David, who, as you know, runs Cloud and Watson. And I saw others on there, too, about, you know, gee, if somebody else spends you, can you be at scale? So why don't you wrap all that together on competitive differentiation?
Yeah, so listen, the best measure of competitiveness is when we're head-to-head, we're winning. And we are winning in several, we've won several big deals. Recently, when I understand why those clients choose the IBM Cloud over AWS and Azure, there's a couple of core reasons. One, a lot of them have a big Java estate. Many of them have WebSphere. In fact, there's a couple hundred million WebSphere installations out there. Whether you've got WebSphere or a different way of Java, a pure web services approach is not necessarily going to work for you. There's a lot of refactoring to be done. There's a lot of complexity to that. And quite honestly, it doesn't make sense for all enterprises to put everything on a public cloud in that way. What they want is something that connects private cloud that they operate and a public cloud with connectors between those. A lot of the engineering we've done on the IBM Cloud between public and private enable that to happen. I would say for the vast majority of computing, which hasn't moved to the cloud yet, it's because this problem hasn't been solved. The original invention of microservices, and then Azure, which largely picked up the same topology, just started if you started from scratch. But there's a big estate to be moved, and we're making that happen, certainly within the IBM base. But I would say what I'm also excited about is the number of new clients coming into IBM who have the same problem and find this answer to be unique, number one. I would say, secondly, our approach to data, our ability to protect your insights, and Watson are also very important, particularly as they have enterprise uses of data and enterprise uses of AI, which are quite different than the more consumer-oriented clouds and consumer-oriented AI.
I'm going to just, you know, one of the very large car companies who was with one of them is completely coming off of that now and onto the IBM Cloud for the reasons David just cited, over around understanding by every country where the data has to go, how it can be protected, not shared, et cetera. Just like I told you, it's going to matter. The other thing, Arvind, make one comment on, Arvind and David work together, the IBM Cloud Private. So to David's point, this is at an early stage of people actually moving these big, important workloads. So IBM Cloud Private, the take-up is huge right now, and it's because it connects to the public cloud.
And provides a common architecture across both private and public, which makes it seamless to move the workloads that David mentioned across private and public, which is huge value to every enterprise.
Yeah, go ahead, Pat. Okay, I won't re-amplify, or we won't get through another question.
Next question. Cognitive solutions is a key part of delivering your long-term model. What will lead to growth acceleration in the segment? Is it all Watson-driven?
Okay, so let's do two things. I want John to answer specifically on cognitive, and Mr. Schroeder, wherever he's sitting down there, to answer in general, because Martin's got the field forces too. It's one of our many channels, but so Martin can hop on after John talk about the portfolio.
Okay, thanks, Ginny. So let me start with, I'm absolutely confident that we're going to grow cognitive solutions and hit the model that Jim showed. Let me start with the value prop and how we're differentiated. It starts with the enterprise cloud that we just talked about, highly differentiated from an enterprise standpoint, from a security standpoint, tailored for different industries. Ginny mentioned healthcare, HIPAA, GXP, et cetera. So we have a great cloud base, further differentiated by Watson. Watson is the best AI in the world. You know, think about the case that Ginny mentioned in healthcare, where we're doing clinical trial matching. Watson is the only AI system in the world that could read and understand an EMR patient record, read and understand a clinical trial set of requirements, and do the match in minutes versus humans taking hours. And then we differentiate further with platforms like blockchain, and Bridget will talk about a little bit more later, I'm sure, security that Jim mentioned, and then we differentiate in these industries on top of that. So that stack, that value proposition, along with the industry expertise that I get from my colleague Mark Foster here in GBS, is completely differentiated. So I think we're in a great position from a product and offering and capability. When you look at the numbers, another way to think about this is, in my business, in Cognis Solutions, about 80% of it is annuity and 20% is transactional. That 80% in 2017 grew pretty close to our model. It's in the transactional space where we had some issues around some on-prem analytics. We know what those offering issues are. We're fixing those issues. If you look at that 80% annuity and you look inside of it, software as a service grew 30% last year. So all of the numbers, all the value propositions say that I'm confident that we're going to hit that model. And then, of course, the clients are voting with their feet and their dollars.
Yeah, I guess I'd say a few things. One, what our clients are telling us, which is really found, you know, quite clearly in our strategy, they're very supportive of the elements of the strategy as we've laid them out. So first of all, the way we handle data, the way we treat their insights and making sure they're theirs are really, really important to our clients. So our strategy around data, which is consistent with our own model, is also consistent with the way they think about how they're going to drive value in their enterprise. Secondly, our strategy around cloud, which we've heard already that it's not just necessarily about one cloud, but it's going to be about multiple clouds. It's going to be about data that sits in their enterprises today, which is likely to sit there for a long, long time. Means that we have to have not only a public version, but we have to have a hybrid and allow them to move their data around. That's absolutely consistent with the way they think about how they're going to deploy these technologies. And then on the topic of deployment, it's all about an industry which has a unique context, which means you need a unique set of skills in order to get it into your process. So what our clients are telling us is that the technologies that John described, along with and some of the phenomena that, for instance, Jim described earlier about how 80% of our biggest clients, 90% of our biggest, but 80% of our clients buy multiple solutions from us, is really the way they think about it. So when they think about what we bring, our consistent strategy, they're saying, one, they're saying, we want you to think much bigger than you have in the past, so do more and more with us. And two, we recognize that it's really only IBM that can do this. So the client's not only consistent with the strategy, but encouraging us to think even bigger than we have in the past.
Okay, good. John, you mentioned blockchain, and we have a couple of questions in here on blockchain, so let me combine a couple of them. Can you talk about the blockchain opportunity for IBM over the next few years, and where is the ability to monetize it? Is it hardware, is it software, or is it services?
Right. Fantastic question.
Thank you.
Which I'm obviously give it to Bridget before she even says it, but it's very interesting, the multiple models of monetization. Yeah. So
let me talk first about the opportunity, and then I'll talk about the monetization. So we moved early in this market because we saw a very large opportunities start to emerge. And just a little note on this. A lot of the hype around blockchain is around cryptocurrencies. And that, of course, currency is one used for blockchain. But at its heart, for enterprises, blockchain is the ability to have an immutable permission record of all transactions and a flow over time. So essentially, you can think that any multi-party workflow in and between organizations could be disrupted and made to be instantaneous versus bilateral, which is a huge deal for organizations' processes. So we recognize this, and we moved quickly, and we're seeing that momentum and differentiation continue with the opportunity. And essentially, it's really in a couple of key areas: technology, skills and capability, and solutions. So with the technology, we built the first software for enterprises. It's permissioned, it's fast, it's secure, and it can be scaled, which is very different from a lot of the blockchains existing out there, which are not for enterprise, and that is required for enterprises to use it. Secondly, I'll talk later on this about monetization. It is on a cloud. So it's a software as a service on a cloud, and that cloud is our mainframe for security. Thirdly, we know for anything to scale in the world today, there needs to be an open standards ecosystem. So we contributed the code that Jim referenced to Hyperledger, and that has become the fabric for enterprise blockchain. And then thirdly, on technology, we're right out there with our research, blending AI with blockchain, thinking about things like crypto anchors, which will show physically changes in goods over time. Our skills, we think, are unparalleled because we've basically put our industry skills together with blockchain skills to build solutions for 400 projects in the world, which is by far the world-leading consulting practice. And then finally, we've taken bets on the processes that are going to be most disrupted. $1.8 trillion, we believe, will be the value disruption in supply chain, $2 trillion in payments. And so we have actually taken investment and ownership bets in building blockchains with our clients and their ecosystems, where we've actually built and own that blockchain network. So when I turn to the monetization from that opportunity, it's early days in this field, but there are a number of models, both our traditional ones, but some very new business models for us. So the traditional one that you would know is, firstly, we will build and run blockchains, right? We'll use our software and our hardware to create a cloud platform, and that will monetize for us. Our consulting practices will build the blockchains, and for many, we'll run and host and manage them. So you know that model. That is a very, very compelling model, and we're seeing that accelerate. But another one that we're seeing accelerate, which is new for us, is the fact that we will actually own these blockchains and be the network owner. And as Jenny said, you saw that in our deal with Maersk, where we'll digitize the global supply chain for shipping. And you will see it in our Food Trust blockchain with Walmart and 18 other of the large food and CPG companies, where we will actually build, own, run, and be the primary investor in that blockchain. So that's an exciting new business model for us. It's early days, but we believe that network effect, that marketplace platform network effect, will actually accelerate for us as we own and build these blockchains. I would add that part of the reason for our success is the fact of the security and scale of the blockchain. And I really would think, I wouldn't like to leave this section without a comment on how the big role that you play in actually making our blockchain work with the mainframe.
Thank you.
Because it's an example of the great new workloads.
I think it is. And just to pick up on that, I think there's a great example of the value of IBM, because you've got GBS services, you've got hosting by our cloud organization, you've got software provided by IBM, and it's running on our hardware. So it's a real good combination across the board. And it's, as Bridget said, a real good example of how we're leveraging the mainframe for new workloads. The highly secure, pervasively encrypted mainframe, I might add, delivered by the Z14. So this is a great example, one of the great examples of us being able to exploit the mainframe, as Jim said, retooled, re-engineered, redesigned, reimagined for our clients and all these new workloads.
All right, we could make a meal out of
we
that.
Could.
One,
we could.
So we did. Yeah, we did.
We love it. Okay. Let me take a question here. Now that new products and services are driving a large percentage of revenues, is it time to revisit portfolio optimization and potential areas where the company could divest slower growth, lower margin categories in order to accelerate the path to your long-term financial model?
All right. So, look, let me quicken, and Jim can add to this. It is always time to be looking at that. And I mean, I think we have shown we are fearless about this, in that particularly margin. There are some things that are a little bit slower growth that we have kept because they do really valuable things for clients. They're of high value. And again, we transition clients era to era. But low margin, there's not room for people that stay low margin here for a very long time. That's a commoditizing area. So we keep coming back through. We absolutely believe we got a winning hand now. I mean, all of our parts, but we keep continuing to go through that pruning process, both acquiring and divesting, you know, so both sides of this. I don't know if I left you anything to add, but feel free.
I would just build on it. If you take a look at what I talked about up front with regards to IBM's transformation, at its core, IBM is always focused on portfolio optimization, and we will continue to do that. I didn't go back farther, Ginny, but if I went pre-2007, our margins over time have been up almost 10-plus points. A very integral part of that has been portfolio optimization, continuing to build new capabilities and leveraging through M&A and building on our integrated model, but also divesting businesses that didn't meet our strategic fit our financial requirements. And we will continue to look forward as we drive our long-term financial.
Yeah, you have our commitment on that. Well,
good, very good. A couple questions on services, so let me put a couple together here. As it relates to your services business, could you tell us what your staffing pyramid looks like given the transformations you've been driving? So that sounds like a GBS question. What are your strategic focus areas going forward? And then services margin seems to be a key part of your long-term model. What gives you confidence that you can deliver this?
So let me have both Martin and Mark, because as I was flipping through questions, there were quite a few on confidence in margins, which gets down to the two services folks here. So let me start with Mark, and then we'll go to Martin. And you can add margins and then add on to some of the other pieces.
Well, we're very confident of our ability to expand the margins, you know, in the GBS part of the business, really for, I guess, for three main areas and reasons. The first is actually the operating leverage that comes from our return to growth and the part that we play actually in leading and integrating the overall IBM value proposition in the context of those trusted client relationships that Jim and Ginny referenced earlier. The second is our ability to actually price for value. And the fact as we see the shift of the mix of our work and more of our work coming through in the consulting areas, in the areas around digital and cognitive, some of the new areas such as blockchain, the opportunity for us to therefore price for value, again in the context of trusted client relationships, is a real opportunity.
And you are seeing that.
And we're seeing that come through. And I think then the third area is then around operational effectiveness. And the questioner asked around the issues of pyramids. And obviously we are in a process of continuing to accelerate the refinement of our pyramids against each of the core service lines that we have, being very clear about how we make money in the different things that we do. We're also, of course, aligning our resources to those hot areas we can find. And many of our pyramids and our delivery end-to-end models are being redefined through cognitive, through the application of automation, and ensuring that we're driving the optimum we can out of the way that we deliver on the value to our clients.
So that is work Mark has well underway, right? It's a contemporary area right now. So Martin, you want to add in?
Yeah,
start with margin?
Let me address the margin question from the technology service and cloud platform segment. There are four things I would highlight. First of all, when you recall the earnings call for the fourth quarter, when Jim reviewed what happened to the margin, the first very important thing, the headwinds we've had in 2017 because of clients bringing workloads in-house, and by the way, they are still very good IBM clients.
These were very unique situations.
Very unique situations, and these headwinds are gone. So number one, we are entering 2018 with very different situation compared to 2017. Second point is, if I take the base portfolio, which is under contract, we see substantial opportunity to drive productivity and the way we do it with our IBM service platform with Watson. It's an AI-based platform using Watson. It's running on the IBM cloud. And we have brought during 2017 about 1,000 client instances onto the platform, and now clients starting to use the functions and the features of the platform. Just to give an example, one of the world's largest food service providers is Cisco. Cisco is using the features now, and after the first couple of quarters, they see that about 50% improvement in server uptime by this automation. Or let's use another example. We are just coming off a large field test. We had about 13,000 times used our augmented reality for our field technicians. And the time to repair, in average, improved by 50%. So these are two examples which gives us clear confidence that in this second point, we can improve margin as well. And there are two more. If I take the large contracts we signed in 2017, they have a different financial profile to the contracts we signed in prior years. And bear in mind, it has been mentioned a couple of times in other calls, 45% of our infrastructure services signings are cloud. So that gives us clear confidence that this is an additional contributor to margin improvement.
Which is, is an accretive margin to you.
Yes.
Yes.
And last but not least, what do we want to do this year in terms of signings? We have standardized our offerings, and the standardization of offerings means time to value shortened for our clients and margin expansion for us. So if I add all four, we are very confident that we will see a different trajectory in margin improvement than we saw in 2017.
Okay, very good. I'm going to break my own rule here and ask a multi-part question. It's going to be for Tom. Can you talk about how the new mainframe will impact, given the success of the new mainframe, how will that help high-value software and services that go with it? We also have a couple questions on Power 9. So can you talk about your strategy with Power 9, and is the focus on new applications such as AI the focus there?
Good. Great. So you saw Jim's chart on the growth of the install base for capacity, or MIPS, that exist on the mainframe. And with our new mainframe, with the Z14, that is continuing. We've seen good performance, obviously, in the fourth quarter and in the third, the introduction of our Z14. The main reason for that is pervasive encryption. People in this world need the added security that only pervasive encryption can give you. And this is the only server in the world that can deliver pervasive encryption without a performance impact. So that has been great for us. Now, the software goes along with that. The software is charged on a capacity basis. So you mix the growth of the install base with the price performance that we deliver to our clients. So there's offsetting functions here, but we continue to see the stability that Jim talked about in this core franchise for us. But we've remade it a number of times for Linux, for mobile transactions, and now for pervasive encryption. On the Power side, we saw in the fourth quarter the growth of Power by 15%. That was largely on a Power 8 install base. We just introduced the Power 9 in the fourth quarter. Both Power 8 and Power 9 were redesigned for AI. What does that mean? It means it's not just the processor, although it is a terrific processor, but it's also about acceleration. And we've got about a 10 times advantage over Intel when it comes to the connection between the processor and a GPU. We've got a 2.5 times advantage in memory. And all of these things give us this great advantage in AI workloads that give us about a 4.5 times performance benefit over x86. We did this for AI because we realized that that is the growth area. If you look at the growth in cognitive hardware over the next 3 years, it's about a 35% CAGR. So going squarely at that opportunity around Power and Power AI, which is software that we deliver all of the machine learning frameworks in. And so the combination of Power AI and Power 9, we're just introducing now in the first quarter the scale-out version that will also appeal to our AIX and IBM I install base. It gives us great hope and optimism for what we can do with the Power franchise in the future.
You know what, Pat, before you go on, I want Mr. Schroeder to comment on something the clients were saying to him, because the other thing on mainframe is market expansion around new clients, right? And it's 20, 30 new clients already. And so, Martin, you were talking about if it was like that blind coffee taste,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. And I'm sure, you know, some on the phone will have some experience with this. So when we talk with our clients about the capabilities that the mainframe can bring, and there's a long list, I won't go through it again, universally, they say, we need that. If we add in the word mainframe, all of a sudden it's no longer universal. Now you'll start losing like 10, 20%. Like, no, I don't want a mainframe. It's not for us. So obviously there's something in the legacy, if you will, of the name that is affecting them, but the capabilities are very, very much tied to the long-term secular trends we see in the marketplace. So just the name itself, when you ask the question, just the name has an impact on the answer you get. So we're thinking about what we do with that, by the way, but universally, the functions and the offering.
Part of what the guys have done, Linux One is a name, and it looks and feels like anything that goes in an internet data center now, the new version. No special requirements, no water, no nothing. It looks just like one of those boring looking racks. And so,
the
secure blockchain network runs on it. So you're going to see more of that.
Okay, we are almost at the bottom of the hour here. I'm going to do one more question here. There are a couple of questions that have come in on quantum. So it says, you lead in AI customer engagements in blockchain and especially in quantum. What can you do? Talk about your progress in quantum. And what can you do to press your advantage to accelerate bringing these to market?
All right. So I'll talk quickly about the hardware and then about the ecosystem and the problem that I solved there. To really win in quantum, you actually have to have an actual quantum computer. And we 2 years ago, we put out a 5-qubit computer. About a year ago, last April, we put out a 16-qubit computer. And in November, Ginny and Jim both mentioned this, we announced that we have a working 50-qubit computer. Now, it's essential to have an actual quantum computer, because if you just try to simulate a quantum on a regular computer, you'll never get any advantage.
Tell them why we say that, because we see so much written about people that don't have one, okay?
So a large variety of the work done in a lot of other places is actually people postulating about a quantum computer and then trying to simulate it on a regular computer. That, by the way, if you talk to people who do simulation, will tell you it'll always be a lot slower, maybe a million times slower than the real thing. So we'll just start with that. Two, the way you program a quantum computer is unique. You got to have these new operations. To do that, we put our quantum computer on the cloud. Now, what is the amount of usage? And then I'll get to the use cases. We had over 75,000 distinct users run over 2 million different, let me call it quantum programs, on our quantum computers on the cloud. That gives you the interest and the usage. The problems they're trying to solve are drawn from similar examples to what Ginny used. Number one is around materials. Materials, by the way, for those of you who think about it, whether it's energy, whether it's batteries, whether it's alloys, whether it's drugs and pharmaceuticals, is a massive industry. And today, all they can do is, I'll call it wet lab experiments. And so being able to do those with fidelity on a quantum computer is going to accelerate the learning and discovery and profitability for those companies. A second big area is going to be around financial risk and optimization, where you can sort of begin experimenting on today's quantum computers, and within a couple of years, you're going to see massive advantage. And then those areas then turn into monetization as people begin to deploy those into practice.
Very John, maybe, but I know we're at the top of the hour, but you know, as our father of original research of all of this on quantum, maybe you want to have the last word on quantum, because I think actually this isn't about hype of quantum, maybe a little bit about what's the reality about when you see this doing real production work for clients, and I know you have watched it from its nascence.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I've been at it since the beginning. I think the way to think about it is we're at the beginning of, we've passed from science now to engineering, we're gonna have systems. It's sort of like the transistor in the early 60s, and then IBM came out with the System 360 in 1964 and set a whole new paradigm for compute. We're right at that point with quantum computing. We've got the best qubits in the world, just as we had the best transistors in the world, but that's not enough. You have to build a whole system. You have to have I/O devices. You have to have programming languages. That's what IBM is excellent at. So we will absolutely lead in the materials. We'll absolutely lead in qubit devices, the quantity, the quality, but we're going to build whole systems. And I believe, Ginny, in the next 2 or 3 years, we're going to have significant impact on a number of industries with quantum computing. Drug discovery, materials discovery, financial services optimization, supply chain optimization, blockchain optimization. So we're right at that point now where this thing's going to take off.
Well, and we'll wrap on the point that, and it will all be via the cloud, because it does operate at 1,000 times colder than outer space.
That's right.
So it will, you won't have one in your basement, nor will a client. So with that, Pat, I wanna thank everyone, because this is our first try of doing a live webcast. We got through clusters of questions, I would say.
Yes.
We will follow up. Give us your feedback. There are going to be several more times to interact with us, both at an upcoming event, as well as we've got some webcasts then planned to go deep dive. I certainly take away from these questions lots of points about accelerating margin, competitive differentiation, but I'm pleased to see so many questions about the new and innovative technology, because it's the point about a pipeline. And so I thank you. It's a super team, and I thank everybody for spending, what has it been, an hour and a half or 2 hours with us this morning. We appreciate it. We're going to be back again.
Great. Thanks, everybody.